Are you ready?
Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling with the War.
All right, y'all, it is BC and Jay back once again, wrestling with the war, and we are ready to wrestle with an amazing war, an amazing one.
Such a big war.
Such a big war.
Such a big war already.
Makes makes World War One and Two look like, I don't know.
There's no words to describe how shitty this start has been.
That is true. I don't know how I'm still a WWF fan after all these years of watching the product
Fair
that
enough.
They're putting out. They're not even trying. At least I feel like WCW is trying, but the
but also WCW feels like this schizophrenic show because they have half of it being like mature and cool, and then the other half filled with Yetis. So it's just like
not Yetis, Yeti. You notice that multiple people called it the Yeti. I thought that was just a Tony Schiavone thing, but it's actually.
It was like its actual
Hogan
name.
Did. Kevin Sullivan called it the Yeti.
Bischoff did too.
Bischoff called it the Yeti. So we've got a Yeti. Maybe there's a trademark on Yeti. I don't know.
There is now for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the drinkable thing or whatever. But yeah. So yeah, so we're going to get into it this week. So I appreciate everybody that's been going along the war so far with us. It's been quite interesting. It's been good. It's 95, man. It's kind of what we expected for this stuff. But we know there's more coming. There's more coming. This week we're going to focus on. We decided to split up the last two parts of October because there's just too much schlock for one episode, I think. So we're going to do In Your House 4, Great White North from Winnipeg, Canada in this episode, and then the follow-up Raw from that, and then we're going to be doing also the same night's Nitro, which is the go-home show for Halloween Havoc. And next week, we'll do Halloween Havoc.
Yeah. Can't
feel
wait.
Good about that?
Feel real good about it.
So
I actually started to, like, I started to press play on Halloween Havoc, and I was like, nope, I want to savor the moment because I was not going to be able to watch the whole thing, so.
You're not going to spoil yourself or anything like that?
No, spoil myself.
That's the sad part. Not even reading like spoilers on this stuff because I want to remember how it happened. I remember a lot of it, but some of it I was surprised by. And
yeah, I definitely don't remember a lot of it.
Probably the stuff that I'm surprised by is not the good stuff. Interesting thing now, I did, before we go too far, I wanted to mention that we've been talking about Sabu and his wonderful trip through WCW and how we completely spaced out on that. And so I was listening to Keeping It 100 with Conan and Disco today, and they had a clip from Sabu on there, and he talks about what was going on at that time. So apparently what had happened is he was in ECW at this time. He had a disagreement with Paul Heyman, and he went over to Japan. He had already signed up to go to Japan, make a ton of money there. He was supposed to go for either a week or a month. I'm not sure what it was. And he had told Heyman like a month before. And of course, Heyman just completely ignored it and just tried to blame it on Sabu and all this stuff. Yeah. And so he does go over there and he's supposed to come back to ECW. And he says, F you, Paul, I'm not doing that because I'm not a fan of your business dealings. And he does actually, him and Disco actually bring up a great point because Paul Heyman like gets a complete pass for being such a complete douche as far as how many people he gypped as far as their payouts and stuff like that. He's just looked at as this creative genius. Meanwhile, you know, Bischoff and McMahon and all these guys just get raked over the coals all the time, right? But anyway, so he was supposed to come back to ECW, but he said, screw that, I'm going to WCW, which is how he landed in WCW, which we saw. He was supposed to be there for, I think it was 3 months or 6 months or something. And basically Bischoff offered him $500 per match. So he was making basically $1,000 per month. He's like, screw that. I'm going back to ECW, which leads to the now famous, if you remember, if you've watched ECW, the return of Sabu when the lights went out. And then all of a sudden they turned them back on and Sabu's in the ring pointing up to the sky. Like nobody was expecting Sabu to be there that night. That's what led to it. So interesting little tidbit. Not a fan of Heyman. Not a fan of a lot of guys, actually. Sabu, he's quite the interesting guy. But yeah, so that's cool. How Sabu ended up in WCW.
Interesting.
So there you go. So that's a little wrap up into our what we're watching right now. Yeah. So it's funny how this is all falling in place.
Back.
These guys have happened to talk about 1995 WCW.
That is pretty good timing.
Good stuff. All right. So let's get into it. We're going to talk about In Your House 4. Any initial thoughts about this show before we get into going through everything?
Like about the pay-per-view?
Leading up to it. I mean, as far as
leading up to it. Yeah. I mean, I think we already talked about it last show that I just thought they could have done more to build. And because like there was some stuff I was interested about, but it didn't feel like a pay-per-view was coming up that was going to be big or massive or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree. It felt like the buildup wasn't in sync. It felt like the two episodes prior was the go-home show, and then you had all this stuff happening. Again, as we mentioned, there was some stuff going on in real life as far as Sean getting his ass kicked by a bunch of Marines and all that stuff. So
9 people in a parking lot.
Well, wait to it turns into a mob in the next episode there. So it just gets bigger and bigger as we go. But we'll get to that on the Raw recap. In Your House 4, it was just originally In Your House 4. It was then, after the fact, years later, named Great White North. And it was taking place in Winnipeg, Manitoba, October 22nd of 1995. So as we know, the main event that they've been really pushing on this one is Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, versus Diesel. And of course, Davey's been all over WWF TV at this point. And he's between him and Razor Ramon. I'm not sure who's got the most camera time with all the double matches these guys do, but definitely Razor and Davey are the MVPs.
Which is just totally amplifying how weak the roster was then, right?
Yeah, it really was.
Double duty.
It really was. So one thing I will say off the get-go, one thing I do miss is I love the set for In Your House, and I think they brought it back for NXT, right? Mm-hmm. Just something simple. It's not like a major set, but it's just something different where it doesn't look like another episode of Raw. I enjoy it. It's just kind of a cool design.
Yeah, I agree. And like everything's different though. Like we were texting back and forth, like, yeah, the set's cool, but like even how they have the entrance is the rampway is not really a ramp. It's just like an aisle between the boards of the hockey boards and then the seats. And then it's like, they have the stairs on what I would say the wrong side because they're both facing the left-hand side of the hard camera. And then that looks weird. And then you have people walking up and down the aisle in the front row. Like, that looks weird. It's just like everything seems so foreign to watch back then. But anyway.
Modern Vince would be irate.
We'd lose their shit. Yeah.
But, even like the referees with like kind of unkempt shirts and things like that, that would just drive him out of his mind.
And I don't even think I don't think even the ring aprons have had different logos on them. I think there was just the WWF logos, like the old colorful ones. Yeah.
Anyway. So just for Canadianity, we did have apparently a local pop star who I had no idea.
International star, I think they called her.
Joni Wilson, apparently.
Never heard of her.
Never heard of her in my life. And I wouldn't say that was a great version of the national anthem, to be quite honest.
I skipped through it after the first 30 seconds. So
she basically tried to Whitney Houston the Canadian national anthem, which is a big no-no. It's just, we don't have the flow of the American anthem. Anyways, we got through that. And we're off into the races with our first match, which is a young Hunter Hearst Helmsley, just recently into the WWF from his stint in WCW, taking on the man just known as Fatu at this point, because I don't even think they were calling him Rikishi Fatu, and who was, of course, as we know, Rikishi and the father of the Usos. But he was Captain Positivity at this point with his Just Say No to Drugs message.
Is that what the Just Say No is?
Yeah.
He did have a BSK toucan, though.
That's right. He prior to this, leading up, I do remember they used to do like vignettes where he'd be on the streets and, you know, talking positivity and trying to stop gangs from having fights and stuff like that. Funny enough, Jim was able to stay awake for about this match, and that's it. And the first comment was, "Man, that guy's got a big ass." I'm like,
that he does. It's only gonna get bigger.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, just be thankful he's wearing tights because it's gonna get worse and worse than this. But anyways, thoughts on this matchup between Triple H?
I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. They took a lot to the outside. I thought Triple H is just he was a selling machine even then. Like he was, yep. he was selling all Fatu stuff. I actually think Fatu was moving pretty quickly and like to flow. Like I thought it was a, I'm trying to recall all the matches. It's one of my favorite matches of the show, I think, because it was really well done. I thought it was really good. Good, like, heel tactics from Trips and sort of Fatu got a lot of stuff in, too. Like, I didn't think it was a squash by any sense. And Triple H got the clean win. I thought that was cool. The, the only thing I will say about the pedigree, because when he was when Fatu was selling the head, kind of you can't hurt my head thing. I was like, well, isn't that going to then eliminate his pedigree? Because
but he lands on his face, not his head, right? Yeah.
So, yeah. But no, I liked it. I thought it was good. It was a good opener.
I was happy with the match. I thought for that time period, it was a good match. I like that Triple H did get the win in this. And then, of course, you now have a little tip off to what's going to be happening for Triple H going forward as you had Henry Godwin come out at the very end. Right. Threatening to slop our good friend, the Connecticut Blue Blood. So it's I know the gimmick was kind of cheesy, but I'm a fan of the Connecticut Blue Blood.
But it didn't feel as cheesy now watching it. It really it really doesn't to me. Like the bow and stuff, but like it doesn't feel that gimmicky now when I watch it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just looking back, or now I'm watching it in a different perspective, obviously because it's Triple H, but. I don't know. I just, I definitely thought that too back then, but now I'm like, I actually wasn't that campy.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree. Which led us now to, after that, a good promo from Davey Boy and Cornette. I mean, Davey looked jacked in, the, in that promo. And actually, his intensity was good. Cornette's always magic on the mic too. So it's amazing to think that like Cornette now is probably about 60 pounds lighter than he was at that point.
He didn't look good there.
No, he even said he was like basically. Hate eating and angry just at the world. He didn't want to be there. He wanted to be down in OVW or whatever, and or Smoky Mountain and doing his thing down there. But yeah, they sorely needed him on the roster at this point, to be quite honest. Then I would say for me, this felt like this next match was the match of the night for me. I would say it was the tag team title match of the Smoking Guns against the 1-2-3 Kid.
Oh, yeah.
Razor Ramon.
That's a good call.
Right off the get-go, we can now see the times are changing as Billy has been demulleted, as I like to call it. He shows up with a fancy new haircut. Bart's still rocking the mullet.
Yep, and the mustache, I think, didn't he have?
Yeah, he still had the mustache as well. I thought this match was super hard-hitting. Like, they were going at it hard. Like, it was, there was no
big, some big meaty boys in there outside of Kid, right? But like the Bart and Razor were going at it pretty good.
And let's not forget, like the Kid is 6'1".
No, he's definitely smaller here with like mass, muscle mass wise.
Yes, yeah.
He got bigger as six.
He was never jacked up, but he was tall.
No, but he got bigger too. I feel like he put on a little bit of muscle
as little he bit, went into DX. Little bit, yeah, for sure. I thought the guns looked great in this match.
Yep. Kept them looking strong. Even though like the win was sort of, they escaped with the win kind of thing, they still retained it, and it led to that kind of beat down afterwards and then the Kid stuff. And I'm interested to see, and it definitely going back in time now is like, oh, is Kid going heel here? Like it made me like sort of kind of intrigued more. So you're right. It was a really good hard-hitting match. There was some good stuff. There was some good selling. There was like, I remember at one point, was it Razor and Bart or Razor and Billy that were like, they were laid out for a good 5-10 seconds and they were kind of crawling. It was good.
Yeah. And
like, Razor's reaction at the end was awesome.
Yes,
like,
it was.
What in the fuck just happened? Like, he didn't even get out of the ring because he was taking his nonchalant time, which is weird though that you would leave the ring anyway. Like, let's be that. That's the only critique I'll have on the booking is like, if he just hit him with the finish. And Kid comes in. Yeah, he doesn't have to leave the ring right away. Why wouldn't he stay there to make sure that somebody didn't break it up, right?
By the rules, he should have been forced out of the ring by the referee, right? So, and it's two face teams, so I guess he's not as worried
that's
about
true.
It.
That's true. He's trying. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. That's
but good point. Yeah, like I love watching Razor work. He's just so smooth.
I'm liking him more and more now watching him again.
The amazing thing about Razor, and we've talked about this in past episodes, is the man is 6'7", a legit 280, 290 pounds, a solid muscle. But when he sells, he somehow manages to shrink himself down and like so that he looks smaller. And it's it's really impressive, like how good he, like he should move that well for such a big man.
Say he doesn't feel like 6'7" in the ring. He's super agile and takes the bumps and even his punches. Like he's, because you compare him and Kevin Nash, and Nash I know is a couple inches taller, but he's not considerably taller, and they're light years apart.
Nash moves like a big man. Scott Hall doesn't, but when it's time to impose his size, that's when he turns it on.
Yeah.
He's just fun to watch, I gotta say. And like I say, you could see Billy is starting to really become the star.
You see a lot of the moveset already in that match.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, you mentioned it. We had like the tiniest of heel turns at the end by Kid, but it was more like a played off as just frustration over him losing the match.
Which is fair. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a quick roll up, is what it was. The vicious roll up, as we know it.
Most devastating.
But move. They're definitely laying the seeds for what's going to happen in the future. From there, we go to our good buddy Marty Jannetty against the debuting Goldust. So this is Goldust's first. Yeah. In-ring appearance with WWF. So
got a great entrance.
Yeah, the entrance, awesome entrance, especially for that time when you think about it.
The
one thing I noticed is the music, they didn't have that little extra part in there that they did in more modern. No, throughout the song, it was just over and over repeated the same thing, but it used to be like this other kind of like symphony stuff into it in later times. But again, it's the first time that we have the music there. But one thing I said was the outfit that Goldust was wearing was not very complimentary to his physique.
Not at all. It was very unflattering.
Yeah. So like in later years, he kind of went with, I don't know what, like a Lycra.
That was more like a Lycra, and he goes with a latex kind of.
Yes. Like a pleather type of thing.
Yeah. It's more like a rigid material versus a stretchy material.
Right. Which hides some of the things in the body, but this one you could definitely see some rolls.
Basically
and things
a
like
unitard.
That.
Yeah.
I thought of course, Jannetty's a good worker, but I thought the match went way too long.
It did. And Jannetty was sloppy in the match, I thought.
Both were.
You're right. You're right.
If you notice, there was one move where Jannetty jumped off the top rope and landed on his feet because Goldust rolled the wrong way. He was supposed to do the foot and the face move, and so they had to repeat that move. So Goldust.
That's what it was. I was trying to figure that spot out.
But then, Marty screwed up a couple of things. Goldust screwed up a couple of things. I think it's just more so neither of them knew each other's style.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of mixing that match up with the next night on Raw.
We'll talk about
a lot of screw ups in that one. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind that match, the Goldust match. I think it did go a little long, but I thought he clearly is still developing his moveset, but it was a good physical match, I thought.
Yeah, as always. Dustin's got a cool moveset. Yeah. What I commented was I felt like he was still trying to find himself in the character at this point.
Yeah, true.
Because he even mentioned like he didn't even know what the hell an androgynous character was at that point. But I mean, it was interesting he won with the Gourd Buster, not his usual...
not the kind of he had a couple things. He had the kind of reverse DDT, like basically the Sting kind of move too. But he also had that one, and I think that was more later on, where he'd pick him up like a suplex and then spin him into a net breaker.
Yeah.
But that was later on, I think. I think he did the curtain call, maybe? He did that drop, the reverse DDT kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
But this was a straight-up Arn Anderson Gourd Buster. It worked. It worked for that. So, but match is too long. This is going to be, you're trying to put Goldust over, and it was kind of a strange one.
Agreed.
Next we get Yokozuna versus Mabel.
This was a cluster, you know what. I didn't understand this match. I didn't understand some of the things that were going on in it. Then the ending, I was like, that makes sense. But why put those two guys in the first place to confuse us? You know what I mean? That was my thought.
I think it was just the whole idea that it's a sight to behold, which I did think that. I thought, you know what, this is like 500 and something pounds Mabel and 600 and something pounds Yokozuna. All I can say is Yokozuna, you can tell he's hurting at this point. He's just got too much weight on his body and he can hardly move. My highlight of the match was seeing Rhino as one of the guys that was carrying out the throne.
very young Rhino,
but as soon as you saw the thighs on him, you're like, that's Rhino.
I just thought that was a throwaway match, and I thought it was a waste of time, to be honest.
And then at the end, the hug at the end was just kind of
so it just builds up to nothing because they feigned that they were going to be pissed off at each other in the beginning. And then they, yeah, I just thought that was a useless match.
But I will call myself out on something. I do have to give credit to Mabel for being a much better worker than I thought I remembered him as, because he was moving pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'll give you that.
But yeah, what a horrible match. Yes. And then we get the first boo-boo face, Sean, I like to call it, as he has to come out and give the Intercontinental title over to Dean Douglas. And he made sure he milked this moment as long as he could, perhaps a little too long. If you remember, he slow walk out to the ring. He stood there in the ring and stared at the belt for, you know, hours on end, and then slowly moved over, then stared a bit more, and then looked at the crowd. And yeah, it was
the whole thing. Felt a little bit awkward, to be honest.
Considering Dean Douglas got about 4 seconds for his intro, and then then you got Sean. I don't even think they announced Dean Douglas, to be quite honest.
But I think he might have been in there when they came back, yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of a strange one. But anyway, so he gives up the belt. So we have a new Intercontinental Champion. It's Dean Douglas. And immediately he has to defend his belt, of course, against who else? If it's not Davey Boy, it's going to be Razor.
Razor.
So we had Razor versus Dean Douglas. And my thoughts on this, better match than their last match, because we talked about how awkward that first match they had was, but still not a great match, to be quite honest.
Because of the ending. I hated that ending.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was up with that?
I don't know why they would go with that ending, because they clearly were planning it to be that ending.
Dean Douglas got screwed, if you ask me.
I know, and it doesn't make any sense, and I don't know. It was
Dean Douglas got screwed twice because his foot was under the rope, plus Razor's shoulders were down.
Right. It's just, it was odd. I hope they explain it further on, but maybe they won't.
They didn't in the next episode.
No, right,
I don't understand that ending. Like, it was a Montreal screw job on Mr. Douglas.
And it was weak. That was the biggest part was it was weak. Anyway. So thumbs down on that match for me because I didn't like it.
Even his reaction, like when he jumped up, it almost looked like he hollered at McMahon at first when he went over to the ropes and he kind of was looking at the commentators. So I don't know.
It'd be cool to get some backstory in that match because that seemed off.
It was very odd. It made him look weak. It didn't actually make Razor look strong or anything like that. But yeah, anyways, Razor's a four-time IC champion. Yeah, four-time IC champion. Nothing against Razor. I mean, certainly there's a guy. He's synonymous with that IC title. So, yeah, but it just, I thought.
Had a bit of a stench on it.
Dean Douglas has got a legitimate gripe here.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, then we go into, from there, our main event. And it's going to be British Bulldog against Diesel. And before we get going, we have Bret Hart join the commentary team, which I did get a kick out of him chasing Jerry Lawler.
Like, I was like, that's so dumb. Like, obviously, King could have just left and then they don't have that whole situation, but then we wouldn't get it on TV. Like, whatever.
And then King comes back a couple of times.
Like, taunting him a few times. Like a little child. It was awesome.
It was literally like a child, yeah. And did you catch like as Brett comes to the table, like him and Vince have this little hug and it's like they're all buddies
all
and
like buddy buddy.
Brett's got this face on, like, oh shucks. Like, and it's like, and I'm thinking, oh,
thanks, Pop.
If you only knew what was gonna happen in 2 years' time there, my friend.
Then I found Vince was subtly burying Brett on commentary with calling Bulldog's sharpshooter, well, in fairness, it's a more powerful sharpshooter, because Brett was like trying to basically say he didn't have it on right.
I know. Yeah. I think they're just trying to sell it. Well, there is a backstory to this match here. Apparently, if you read up on it, Vince wasn't too happy with the performance during this match, the Diesel performance, and he basically things went off the air, he threw his headset down, got up off the announce table and like looked at the ring and said horrible, just fucking horrible, basically to Diesel and Davey Boy. I think he was more mad at Diesel, to be quite honest, because when I watched this match, I was trying to look for something.
The effort in
And I think the problem was just Diesel spent a long time just selling on his back, like just laying there. There wasn't a whole lot of movement. He was like a fish out of water, basically. So apparently, I guess Davey Boy went back and apologized immediately, just saying like he apologized for how horrible the match was. I myself, I didn't think it was horrible. I didn't think it was great, but I didn't think it was horrible.
It didn't stand out to me as a stinker.
No, yeah. It was so right from the get-go, it was really weird. Like that stupid, like they had Doc go up to Diesel right before he's going out the curtain. And he's like, Doc, I'm feeling a little funky.
Like, what makes no sense. Like,
yeah, what? Just really weird. Like this Diesel character is just weird.
But it also just sort of amplifies at this time. You can just kind of tell Vince doesn't have his grips on stuff like he does now or did have. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's chaos a little bit more.
Yeah.
Which makes me appreciate and respect what Vince did later on, right?
Well, and it was almost like they just didn't have an idea what was cool at that point, yeah, right? True. And I don't know, maybe those guys were trying to put something cool into it, but Vince definitely didn't. But it was night and day from what you're seeing on Nitro, right? I mean, if you pull the whole Dungeon of Doom stuff out of Nitro and the Hogan stuff.
But can you, though? You can't really. To be fair, you can't really pull it out.
That's the thing. But anyway, so he's feeling a little funky. As I said, it was not
whatever the fuck that means.
I know it was not a great match, but not the worst match. Davey was definitely trying to spell the leg,
and like he was definitely trying. I loved Cornette. It was that match, right? Where Cornette was like jumping on his leg and stuff and like dropping an elbow. He just kept coming back and kicking him, and it was just great.
Davey did his job. He worked the knees of, like, that's what you do with the big man. Brett
did a great job in commentary to sell the fact, cut him down. Like
he did.
Get him off his feet. Blah blah blah. Yep. He was like, yeah. I thought Brett was actually really not Brett like. He was actually entertaining on commentary.
Well, and yeah, like I can't fault Davey. All I can figure is what got McMahon so angry was the fact that Diesel basically just laid on the mat and took it, but he wasn't giving a whole lot of effort. Yeah, it's kind of like I talk about, like in some, when we talk about the difference between old school and today, and I know like we talk about how it's slow in that, but when you see a match where a guy is actually constantly selling the pain in the move, it makes a difference with that. But
the only thing I'll say, like he did that one time where he went to do that leg over the rope thing. He did do a shitty sort of half-assed, like I can't run kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which looked awkward, but like kudos. He tried to at least sell that.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, Diesel legitimately had bad knees, so
yeah, fair enough. But how about the pie face from Nash to Brett? That was aggressive.
It was super aggressive.
You could tell that there's just heat there between everybody.
It helped the schmoz at the end, though.
Brett and Diesel.
Yep, but you're right. Even that didn't come off the best. It was like broken up too soon or something like that.
It seemed like they were like fake. Like it was way too forced, and like the way they were trying to separate them, I was like, they're not even really that aggressive right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like it definitely wasn't like a Lesnar type pull apart kind of thing.
And why was Diesel mad at Brett in the first place?
Exactly. Well, cause he caught him.
He caught him. Yeah. He just kind of helped him, really. Yeah.
And they were trying to sell it, like, well, to be fair, he doesn't know who's touching him. I was like, no, he knows exactly who's at the table at the time. Like anyway.
So I get why he's mad afterwards, because Brett ends up causing the disqualification because he runs in.
But the initial pie face, it made no logical sense.
No, exactly.
And
it
was really aggressive. And then Davies was aggressive-ish too, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It was just a strange one. So overall, your thoughts on this pay-per-view?
I mean, it was mid at best for sure. I don't even think there's really a highlight other than the tag match, like you say, and the, I thought the Triple H match was really good too. Maybe it takes it to a C+. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a D. Low. It's the D, all right. if you are gonna go back and watch anything off of this pay per view, I would watch the tag match Razor and Kid versus the Guns, because that was pretty much the only thing that was decent on this. And Joni Wilson, I guess maybe that'll turn your crank.
There's always some good old Doc sightings, so you get your Doc in there too.
Vaunted Winnipeg Blue Bombers offensive tackle Chris Walby was in the front row. We had a vampire in the front row for no reason at all. I don't know what.
So here's my only bone to pick. Did they say it was Winnipeg? Because the next night's in Brandon, and it looked like the exact same arena.
Yeah, they did say Winnipeg. Yeah, they said the Winnipeg Arena.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I missed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, there's In Your House 4. not exactly a great pay-per-view. It's not the worst I've ever seen, but it's not the best. And yeah, that's all I'll say about that. But let's move on. Before we get going into our Raw and Nitro reviews, you wanted to say a few words about our very, very good sponsor, Betstamp.
Yes. Well, given the Super Bowl is fast approaching and how much hype and spotlight is going to be on that, you might as well get this, take this opportunity to jump into the Betstamp app and see if you can win some money, right? Watch the game, win some money, eat some food, have some drinks. It's all around good, good thing to get into for next Sunday's game. And the reason why this app stands out above the rest is betting lines usually have different odds at each sports book, but by using the Betstamp app, you can line shop across all sports books to ensure you are finding the best value available for each wager. So that's a bonus. They have verified bet tracking. So Betstamp allows you to track verified bets across all major sports books, which allows you to keep track of all your different accounts and build more credible record as a bettor. There's also the ability to follow some of the winners in the past, so you can follow winning bettors. You're able to follow other Betstamp users to instantly be notified when they are tracking picks. Following these users in the Betstamp app pick marketplace is a great way to find new bets. So if you're just strolling along, want to put no thought into it, you can just pick somebody who's a good winner. They also have a commission-free marketplace. So for those looking to buy and sell picks, Betstamp offers a peer-to-peer selling platform with no royalty taken on transactions. Also cool. So if all that sounds cool to you and you want to maybe take a chance of winning some money for the big game and enjoy the game a little more, then pop in the WWTT referral code when you download the app and tell them we sent you, and that would be much appreciated, and we all win. And you hopefully win some money. So go check it out, Betstamp.
For sure. And for the Super Bowl this weekend, go Eagles, because that's my son's team.
So. I am going to hold a neutral position on that.
Neutral position. Okay, we'll go with that. All right. Make sure you log on to Betstamp. Use that promo code WWTT and use Betstamp to increase your odds.
Do it, monkey.
All right. So there you go. Thanks a lot, Jay. Appreciate that. And as I say, our good friends at Betstamp, we appreciate them supporting the Wrestling with the War podcast. So speaking of wars, Raw is war, but it's not war yet. Unfortunately, we're still just in the Monday Night Raw era. So we're going to go over the follow-up show to Raw. Usually we do Nitro first, but there's a reason why we're doing Raw first, because honestly, this show left a bad taste in my mouth, and I'd rather finish off with Nitro, to be honest with you. So for a follow-up show to a pay-per-view, holy crap, this was
generic AF, man.
Man, this is I'm just finding it hard to believe that this is a Vince McMahon-led product at this point. There's the attention to detail is just not there. And I mean, this felt, I mean, I've seen Saturday morning superstars that are more exciting than some of these episodes that are going on. You had number one contender for the IC title. My first initial question is, why is Dean Douglas not out there?
Guaranteed a rematch.
Yeah, demanding a rematch. Like, yeah. I'd be opening the show either with a pissed off Diesel, a pissed off Brett, or a pissed off Dean Douglas.
Yeah.
Or have them all three of them for throughout the show.
Yeah.
But no, nothing. Enough. You have like a half jobber full battle royal that
was,
I don't know.
Yeah, it was not super exciting either.
No, it wasn't. It was, I called it jobberific. I thought for sure Sid was winning the way they were promoting Sid as far as it goes. And of course, him compared to the rest of them looked that way. But I mean, Bundy was in that match and he's out within like 4 seconds. You have Bam Bam Bigelow, you have Sid. None of them make the final four of this. Your final four came down to, if I remember correctly, it was Marty Jannetty, Savio Vega, Owen, and Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Yes. Yeah.
And I found myself cheering for either Owen or Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
I know.
Yeah. I mean,
it was not engaging at all. I was very much not into it.
You wanted to talk about some of the botches by Marty?
Well, I just, when it got down to the end, poor Owen was having to deal with Marty's, like, just, there was one spot where Marty was trying to hook his feet into the top rope and push himself off. And they had to do it three times, I think, because I don't know who screwed it up. It looked like Marty was doing something wrong. And so, like, I could just, and then Then they went back to do it again, and then you could see Marty's just like, no, screw it. And they went in the corner, and he just did punches in the corner on him in the corner. But it's like, it just was sloppy. It just didn't feel good.
Yeah, I mentioned that whole spot where Ohm was clinging to the ropes. He basically worked that entire spot by himself, he was he basically forced himself outside the ring, then did the whole thing where he's pulling back on the ropes.
Because Marty couldn't get him over the first time in the suplex.
And then Marty wasn't really doing anything. Like he it was really strange. And then I don't know if maybe Marty was under the influence of anything at this point. I mean, I don't say that.
No, but it could have been, because it looked like he might have been.
But anyways, in the end, it's Owen that gets the win after a kind of a ending. It certainly wasn't Gunther Cody, I'll put it that way. But it's funny, I was thinking to myself, I could actually get behind a small Marty push, you know, if it wasn't for the ridiculous gear and stuff like that. But
rapping. He did like some rap promo.
Oh, I meant to mention that.
What the hell was that?
His promo at the beginning was hilarious. It was like literally MJ.
He was literally rapping. I was like, oh my God.
I guess Michael Jordan was retired at this point, so he figured he could steal the MJ name at that.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. But we got Owen as the number one contender. Yep. So that Razor Owen's going to be a fantastic match. I will say that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. Then we get Lawler, of course, do a quick interview with Owen and Cornette. And of course, they're fine as far as that. But again, Lawler does his routines, talking about the Stu and Helen and how old they are and stuff like that. It just never gets old with him. We then move on to a review of the Diesel Brett situation in your house, where they just do a recap of the fight they got into. But then nothing after that. We don't get Brett. We don't get Diesel.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand.
It's a dead end.
And then I had to bring it up. I don't usually review the Slam Jam portion, but what was Doc on at this point in the Slam Jam? Like, was he on something?
It might have been.
Like, he was hopping around. Those t-shirts
are so bad.
They are so bad, yeah.
They're horrible.
So bad. He's hopping around, and then he does his fake, like, there's something going on back there.
Concern to the arena, which is clearly, you're in Connecticut, guy. We know you're not there. Like, it was just,
and his concern was Bob Backlund was in the crowd shaking hands with people. Like,
and then Vince had to point out that we're in Canada and he's campaigning in the wrong country. It's just like, God, what the fuck was that?
What is this? And then I think, if I'm not mistaken, they went from that to Barry Dudinsky doing the sell for the stand up Shawn Michaels and stand up Bret Hart cardboard.
Yes.
Like, come on. Like, this is
only
brutal.
$20.
Only $20, and we'll throw in a blank video cassette as well. The best of Captain Lou Albano. Enjoy.
Oh,
and it just gets better from here. We have a debuting Al Snow as Avatar.
Avatar. I knew it was him, but I didn't remember the Avatar gimmick.
Well, how could you tell? He was wearing a mask.
After he got in the ring. What was the fucking point of that?
I don't know. He walks in the ring without the mask, puts it on, then takes it off after the match is over. Apparently, they were going for a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers thing with this gimmick, but I don't see really the connection to the Power Rangers on this.
No, it did not connect.
Which is ironic, because it's like Al Snow, I guess, apparently in this same year, he had like an amazing match. I think it was with Chris Benoit in ECW, which was considered one of the matches of the year earlier, like say in February of that year. Apparently the reason he gets called up is because he's doing some amazing stuff down Smoky Mountain with Kane. Kane was Unabomb at this point. Al Snow and him were tag team partners. So everybody was raving about Al Snow. And then immediately they put him into this ridiculousness. And I don't know what's going on with the curse of the 95, but even Al Snow was doing botches here.
He was botching the hell out of that match.
He was. Yeah. His opponent was not ready for prime time either. I mean, that guy was brutal, but still a lot of botches going on.
Yeah, it was just bad.
Oh, okay. So then Al does get the win, but I mean, I could almost
won in that situation.
I can almost hear the disappointment in Vince's voice when he was announcing that match, as if to say, oh God, what have I done?
Yeah. You know,
it's like he gave up at this point.
Yep.
But we're not done with this show.
No, the shitstorm continues.
We then have Alundra Blaze versus Bertha Faye for the women's
title. I had to look up Bertha Faye, because she wasn't ringing a bell with me. And then I was like, oh, okay. some sing Canadian kind of thing, but she wasn't, she was around for a cup of coffee, right?
So, and I'm going to give a shout out to a good friend of our podcast, Andy, the tax man from Grappling with Canada, because he does a fantastic episode of his Grappling with Canada show on Rhonda Singh and the history of Rhonda Singh, who was known as Monster Ripper over in New, in, I think it was all Japan at that point, but she was a complete badass over there. And of course she was Rhonda Singh in the Canadian wrestling scene. But then of course,
then Vince takes her and sanitizes her into a comic gimmick.
She did not like this gimmick at all. She didn't last long. She was gone. She was gone after this. That was it. Ironically, Alundra Blaze would be as well pretty soon, but just unfortunate. Just the match was just meh, because they didn't really let Bertha do anything. And what was up with Lawler shitting all over Alundra's looks?
Yeah, his commentary's I don't know where it was coming from. It was almost like personal heat there.
Yes, it was, I get that he's a heel, but I almost felt like that was Vince talking through Jerry, you know, to I just don't think Vince was happy that she wouldn't like wear bikinis and you know, get a nose job or something.
Weird uni,
Yeah, so I just, anyways, it was, the only thing impressive was that German suplex that.
Yeah, the finish was cool.
Yeah. And then after that, you just had the HBK sit down with JR, which really wasn't explosive. It was just,
I was like, oh, because when it was over, I was like, oh, that's it.
That's it.
End of the show.
Yeah, I just happened to have the worst luck. Oh, that's the other thing I meant to mention. In the Avatar match, apparently HBK was now attacked by a mob.
Yeah, they were trying to really sell that.
God. Anyway, so we had the what was me, and I feel for JR because he's trying to bring the real sports feel, and he just feels so different in this episode than anybody else. But yeah, so Sean's got a concussion. He's gonna have some bad tag team partners at Survivor Series. Apparently Ahmed's a unknown quantity that's gonna
wild card.
Yeah, I know. We got our first taste of an Ahmed promo, which I cannot wait to hear Ahmed on the mic. But that was Raw. It was probably one of the most brutal episodes of Raw.
It was bad. Especially coming off the momentum of a pay-per-view. It was bad.
When you could have easily just had those three guys come out.
When it would have had to been live, wouldn't it? Because it was the night after the pay-per-view.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Or live to tape, I guess, but.
I just don't understand why they didn't come out and just cut some promos, and it would have been so much better in my show. Yeah. All right. So that's Raw. So now let's go to the October 23rd episode of Nitro. So this, of course, is going to be the go home show for Halloween Havoc. So big difference here. So we start off with Randy Savage in the ring facing Kurosawa, our boy.
Which Kurosawa. I like that Kurosawa guy. Great. And now he's got Colonel Parker. He didn't have him before, right?
No, he did have him in the last one. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love this match. I thought it was great. We did get the Macho entrance. So that was cool.
Yep.
We got the whatever that orchestra song's called. But yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought they did a really good job selling like the injury for Macho. And then the only criticism I have of that match, because I really liked it, was how much that Kurosawa had to crawl and slink his way over to get set up for the elbow. That was my only beef, but that happens all the time. I thought it was a good match.
Yeah. I thought Kurosawa looked like a badass.
Yeah.
Savage. There you go. Savage gave him so much offense. Like Kurosawa dominated that match. And then Savage gets the win with his elbow drop, which is fine. So he looked like a star, and that was a good way to do it. And it was a hot start. Like immediately you're into Savage to kick off the show. I thought it was
good. And they were throwing shade at In Your House right away too.
Yes.
Was it that first segment or the second segment? Anyway, they were throwing shade right away at the pay-per-view.
As Mongo put it, in your outhouse, I believe.
Yes. Very clever, Mongo.
So we go from that hot start with Kurosawa Savage to more, as I call it, more Dungeon of Doom fuckery. So you had King Curtis Iaukea come up on the big screen.
I couldn't hear a fucking word that guy was saying.
I know.
Yeah. What was with that?
King Curtis Iaukea is a well-known, veteran of wrestling who was well-respected. He was one of the badasses of, from like the Hawaiian wrestling and part of the Samoan lineage and all that stuff. And, he was a true mentor to Kevin Sullivan in the Florida Championship Wrestling days. But this character was not working, man.
Have we seen this character before?
Yes, I think we had. I think we had like just vignettes. Not right. I don't think he ever actually appears in an arena.
He was like in the arena up top or something, wasn't he?
Well, it was on a screen.
Was it? I thought he was sitting above the stage. I couldn't.
Maybe
tell.
He was, but I thought it was a screen. But yeah,
you're probably right.
But the worst part is we get our first reference ever to the Yeti.
And they didn't say anything. It was just a giant block of ice at first, but
yeah. Well, it's a block of ice with like a purple light in there.
The impending doom of the silhouette.
Didn't look fake at all.
Very good props. Yeah.
But like, what is this? Like, we just get this dropped in our laps. There's a block of ice
policy, man. Clearly, it's the insurance policy.
Yeah. The Yeti. Well, you know, it's it could have been worse. Could have been the ultimate solution, like like Hogan had with the Renegade.
It's not a good term.
Not a good term at all. No, actually, no. The worst term was when they called the guy Jeep Swenson. He was the final solution, which is
that's what I was thinking of. Yes.
Yeah, right. The very, very bad reference. Oh man, but yeah, and I do pronounce it Yeti because that's what everybody else was pronouncing it. Like only Bobby Heenan said Yeti.
Yeti.
That was it. Everybody else said Yeti. So yeah. I think there might have been a trademark situation there. So from that DOD stuff, we now go to Dark Hogan and Stockholm Syndrome Jimmy Hart. They're back with Mean Gene.
The conflicted, I still cut the same promo, Hogan, but I'm dark now kind of
But
guy.
He's throwing shade at Sting and at Luger and
I'll
Macho.
I'll just make fun of everybody when I'm the same promo, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting for sure. And poor Jimmy, man. I just feel for that guy.
He's the placeholder for the belt.
I think he's got a black eye under those shades. But it's fine. We can now wipe the palate clean because what was up next was fantastic. We had Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko facing off against Mr. JL and Eddie Guerrero. Of course, Alex Wright was originally supposed to be Eddie Guerrero's partner in this match, but somehow he hurt his knee. I'm not sure what the story was on that. So he, of course, with on crutches and a hurt knee, still comes out in his wrestling trunks because
why not?
Why not, right? Yeah. That made no sense to me, but
I didn't clue into that. That's a good point.
They could have just put the knee brace on the outside of his jeans or something.
Yeah, like why do you got to get in your gear, guy? You're not going to wrestle.
As we start this match off, like we have this amazing match. So what should we do? We should probably put some more Dungeon of Doom in there. They go to the back and it's a Shark Scott Norton.
Yeah. Which again, I was like, okay, you're referencing like how many weeks before, which meant nothing anyway at the time. Like, fuck, that was dumb. Where are they going with that? Is that just to give Scott Norton something? Or?
I think there's just more confusion. Just try to keep more chaos, which I did like that. As much as it was stupid, at least it shows it's chaotic, right?
Yeah.
So, but you had JL and Eddie do get the win after Alex Wright trips Dean Malenko up, and they take advantage of it, which is a little bit of a heel move. Yeah. And then after the match, it was kind of weird that Eddie kind of ran off and just was by himself, but it made sense when Brian Pillman came out and jumped him. And I will point out Brian Pillman is flashing the big four.
The four horsemen.
Yep. So more to come with that. But I love unhinged Brian Pillman. He's great, by the way.
And it was cool, too, to say, okay, they're tying him into the Cruiserweight because Bischoff mentioned briefly about a Cruiserweight tournament, to come or something like that. So,
and it was very... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so you get the tie-in with Pillman and the Cruiser too.
Yeah. And it's very smart how they're working. They're introducing all these guys all at once, but they're doing it in a way that you can get used to them and get excited about it.
Absolutely.
It's obviously we're going to see much more of that in the future. And it's probably one of the best things that WCW brought to the table.
Agreed.
Okay. So one thing I mentioned about this show at this point, I'm thinking to myself, there's lots of chaos in the show, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's exactly what WWF could have used on Raw, a little bit more chaos. Even if they had maybe Diesel and Brett arguing backstage or pushing each other or something, that would just been something different. Or Douglas jumping Razor or something like that.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
We then go to our main event, which is Sting and Lex Luger tag teaming against Harlem Heat. And as you remember, Sting gave old Lexi the bad mouth the week prior, trying to push him into joining the fight. So we had Harlem Heat, which is always a good thing because you get Sister Sherry.
It's Sherry.
What were your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I thought it was good. Again, like star guy. Like these guys are like, you could tell, like they're stars. And I thought it was good good beefy match. There was a lot of good good stuff in there. Some Heenan Sherry commentary, which was always nice too. And Bischoff denigrating Sherry. That was interesting. But yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a good match. And I'm becoming more of a Sting guy through these weeks for sure.
Yeah. No, same thing. I thought it was a good match. Two teams that I really enjoyed watching. Four big hosses in there. And then Harlem Heat is awesome. You get Sting, Luger, get the win. Then Giant comes in, starts choke slamming them. And then you have Dark Hogan to the rescue. My only thing that I have a complaint about this is I don't think I would have had Giant be touched or sell during that whole...
Right, that the thing in the corner, yeah.
Because he was not selling very well. He just made him look weak, to be quite honest. And all it was a couple of heads off the turnbuckle type of things. And he
flung back. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just greenness for Giant at this point. But I wouldn't have had him touched. I would have just let him
get out of the ring. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So from there, for some reason, we go back to that block of ice, and what happens? It explodes.
No, because the floor was shaking. What is going on? The floor is shaking. And then they panned back to the block of ice that gets hit by the lightning that explodes.
That's right. There was lightning involved. There was
lightning. And then literally 5 seconds before the show goes off air, they reveal the mummy for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. Then they're off the air. And I was like, what in the actual fuck? Like, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense.
I think it was like a half a second total that he was on screen, but they ended more abruptly than we end our show.
But it just, like, why would you not just hold that off until, because you weren't going to see anything more on TV. You didn't sell any more pay-per-views for that.
No.
If anything, you were going to sell more to say, we'll see this guy at the pay-per-view kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. No. That was
dumb. Anyway, so we get our first glimpse of the Yeti, which they probably should have saved for that pay-per-view because it wasn't the most impressive seeing a mummy come out of a block of ice. But
who was playing him?
It's Ron Reese. He was in what's his name? Raven's Flock at one point.
The big guy with the long hair?
Big dude, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I think he was called Reese, maybe.
Yeah, I think he might have been. Yeah. He was a legit like 7 foot tall or whatever, but yeah, he's not again another green guy. So and we'll see the results of this coming up soon. But so the Yeti makes his debut and then we fade to black. Lots of chaos, lots of action. I myself am hyped for the pay-per-view more so than I am for In Your House.
I agree, I am too. That's why I was almost gonna watch it, but
I'm holding off. Unfortunately, know what happens in this pay-per-view. So
yeah, I don't. That's why I love this. I have no idea. I'm keeping it 100.
I can't wait to get the text from you when you watch this pay-per-view. It's Yeti-rific. So honest.
Nice.
All right. Well, that'll wrap up our glimpse at In Your House and the Monday Nitro and the Raw from the 23rd. So. Get your popcorn ready, my friend, because you gotta watch some Halloween Havoc.
I'm excited.
It's gonna be spooktacular.
It's gonna be tricky.
All right, well, people, thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us on this journey. As always, we appreciate the support. We got some great friends out there to help them bump up this podcast, and we're having a little bit of fun with it. So if you want to reach out to us and talk about what we're doing or give your thoughts on everything that we've seen so far, reach out to us either on Twitter at WWTTPod or on Facebook at Wrestling with the Truth or Instagram at WWTTPod or wherever you want to get us, or head on over to our YouTube channel. Leave some comments on some of the videos over there as well.
Absolutely. Go check it out.
For sure. But for JMBC, and I'm about to say that we're running out of time.
Team is
Team Machines are rolling.